Ted Kitchens, Manchester Boston Regional Airport Executive Director, joining us out of the gate, talking about a busy, busy time at airports right here at home, and a lot of people still going south and coming back home after a week. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Jack. Great to be with you. Thank you for having me on again.
Well, always a pleasure. What are we seeing? What are the updates? I know this is a very busy time of year for you. What are you seeing?
Yeah, we had a really strong spring break here. Obviously, New Hampshire schools are still out, so but most people have already gone to whatever travel destination they're looking at going to. So we're kind of on the back end of that spring travel period, but a really good spring for us. And we're getting ready here in May to start the increased frequencies to Raleigh-Durham on Avelo on May 2nd, and then celebrate the launch of the new flight to Greenville-Spartanburg on May 10th.
It's fun to have. It must be fun for you to get some new hubs, new routes, new stuff to announce, because I'm also hearing and seeing much more North Carolina, South Carolina destination talk of people now.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's one of the fastest growing parts of the country. Are both the Carolinas and Raleigh and Greenville in particular are two really fast-growing metro regions. And obviously, we're doing a good job if Avelo is going from two times weekly to four times weekly. That's 100%. I'm not a math major, but I think that's 100% increase. So they're doing a great we're doing a great job of filling up those airplanes, and we just need to continue to keep doing that. And I think if we do, there could be some more opportunities for us coming forward.
Are you seeing a lot of the carriers on some of these flights? You mentioned the end of spring break or still some vacation stuff, but people just traveling a little bit now until things really settle into summer here. Are these flights pretty packed, pretty full?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our load factor for the 2 weeks for so far, I mean, obviously, we saw, like I said earlier, we still have a few days to go here and the New Hampshire travel period, but so far for our spring travel period, we're well into the 90% full category, probably at 92-93% full.
Yeah.
So you can't really get much more than that, because 7% of seats on a 120-seat aircraft is,
yeah,
now you're looking at maybe 10 seats, right? And those are probably all going to be center seats in the middle of the row. So no one's going to really buy those. So essentially, when you're at 93%, you're effectively at capacity. So that's a message we're certainly taking to our carriers and saying, look, next year we could probably use a little bit more, right? And we'll fill those up, and just like we did this year.
Good. And the worker shortages seem to have quieted down that we were seeing months ago.
You've seen some headlines. Yeah, you've seen some headlines like Spirit is letting go of 260, I think it was, pilots. You're seeing some other airlines like Southwest slowing down their recruiting classes for pilots and crew. So I think we're starting to see that level off a little bit. But I think that's more a symptom of Spirit's just trying to trim costs. Obviously JetBlue didn't have a good first quarter earnings call yesterday either, so they're furloughing some pilots or just paying pilots to stay at home.
Yeah.
So there's a I think this is a little bit more indicative of the overall macro economic forces, within the airlines, but also, the delivery problems that both Boeing and Airbus continue to have. Yeah. Southwest is slowing down because they're not getting new aircraft off the assembly line.
Mm. Well, always something.
So it all has a trickle-down effect.
It does. Ted Kitchens, executive. Go ahead.
And we're way downstream of those, so
yeah.
I apologize, Jack. Thank you.
No, you're not. Hey, you're not producing the airlines. If you do that, manufacturing the airlines, if you do that, call Boeing. No, I'm kidding. Ted Kitchens, and always the great airport, great amenities inside, great and easy, convenient, affordable parking, Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. Thank you, Ted.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Jack.
One of our political analysts and all-stars, Brad Card, Card and Associates out of D.C., regular guest and contributor, part of the show. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Jack.
Busy time, I guess. Let's break down this foreign aid package and what's going on, because I know there's also a lot of people gathering outside the Supreme Court. They're hearing some arguments on some of the states where it might have more of an abortion ban, when you can do an emergency surgery. But let's start with this foreign aid package and the politics in D.C. going on in Congress.
Yeah, so this obviously started off super contentious, and it was
you know, a big question whether or not this package was ever going to happen. Remember that they were requiring for a while a border security bill, and Senator Lankford from Oklahoma spent a lot of time negotiating a bipartisan bill with the White House and with Democrats and other Republicans, and then President Trump came out against it, and that tanked that. So we had a whole big mess, and everything was up in the air, and it overwhelmingly ended up passing the House, and it passed the Senate overwhelmingly, although there were 15 Republicans who voted against it. You know, look, I think it's necessary, and I don't think that we can stand by while Russia is steamrolling Ukraine. And so I think this was a necessary bill. There's also a ban on TikTok in there for sales that they have to sell TikTok within a year. So a lot in this package, $95 billion package, pretty expensive as well. But, you know, either, in my opinion, leaders lead, countries need to lead. We support democracies. I think that it was the right thing to do. I would have voted for it.
What about this TikTok sort of addendum, or, you know, putting the pressure on, you know, the Chinese interest or ownership to divest and all that? You know, where, how does this play out?
Well, it's a good question. Obviously, there'll be legal challenges to this, I don't think it will be settled soon. But look, I think you have to trust our intelligence. And in my opinion, guys who are privy to a lot more information than I am, have determined that TikTok is basically providing information to China, and China is infiltrating our media markets surreptitiously through TikTok. And I believe that they are a threat, and so I think that they're taking some action to stop that. And it's not an end of TikTok. I think what they're doing is trying to say have a ban and sell it within a year, and make sure that the privacy of Americans is protected. So I give Congress credit for acting.
Brad, I want to switch gears on the presidential front, and a story that, because I know polling, and you and I talked before the show, can cut both ways, but I'm continue to be amazed. Because from a news point of view, not a politically, what's the word, partisan point of view, from a news point of view, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Say what you want, no well-known name and figure, going back to his environmental law activism to the Kennedy name. So we all know he's running, and he's working to get on ballots. And I see total ignoring of the Kennedy quest here, even if it's minimal, from the national media. No interest factor at all, no 60-minute sit-down. They're just totally ignoring him. And I find that interesting, the national media, because I happen to believe, we had a guest yesterday, J-Dog, who, Martha Zoller from Georgia, she predicts, pretty sharp, Kennedy will get at least 20%, do better than Ross Perot did in terms of like 20% as an independent. That is not an insignificant story. Does he win? No. But does he affect the outcome potentially? Yes. What do you think on this?
I think 3 to 5% in given states, some of the battleground states, if he gets 3 to 5% on a ballot, I think that could flip individual states, battleground states. So I think he's definitely playing a factor. You're right. He's not going to be president. There are a lot of people that would say, why are you doing this if you're not going to be president? But it's going to have a big impact. I think Cornel West as well can play a role in some of these battleground states. Again, getting 1, 2, 3%.
But do you notice
we had a very close election, Jack, and this is going to be a close election as well.
I know you. So, you hover in the political stuff in D.C. and nationally, but do you notice the national media just totally ignores these independent candidates? It's all Biden and Trump. Trump, Biden, 24/7. There's no coverage at all.
Well, first of all, the national media is. I really think drops the ball when it comes to politics in general. I really do. They talk about national polling and a presidential election, which really doesn't mean a thing, because you know we don't have national elections per se. We have an electoral college, which weighs states So
yeah, by the way, some people want to get rid of that. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, and they and then you'd be electing people from New York
and California. And yeah, how's that going to work for us? Yeah.
So there you go. Look, I think that it's wrong the way that the national media is covering this. They need to be including Robert Kennedy and Cornel West, quite frankly, in their calculations wherever they're going to be on a ballot.
Well,
because
they're going to
they
look pretty. They're going to look pretty dumb come this November.
I think the big question is, though, Jack, does it impact? Does it pull more from Trump or does it pull more from Biden? And I've seen polling that suggests both.
Yeah,
I'm not really convinced which candidate it's going to help or hurt with Robert Kennedy more.
Well, let me tell you why I think it hurts Biden more, and it's not just because that's the obvious thing you think I'd say. The Trump supporters don't move. You and I know that. They're cement. His support is like...
Yeah, but there's not
I know. That's not what gets him elected. It's independent voters. So independent voters who may not like Trump and may not like Biden are going to look at Kennedy more. The question is from that, Biden does not have a cement on his base. He doesn't have concrete base like Trump does. So Biden needs all the Democrats he can get and a lot of independents. And they're not enamored with Joe Biden. Younger voters don't like him.
Yeah, I think he does have a base. I think he's got a base vote that probably isn't too far off of Donald Trump's baseball.
But no, it's independents, though. Independents looking at Biden and Trump. And this is why I think Kennedy pulls more from Biden. I think independents are going to look at their pocketbooks and wallets this fall. They're going to look at the economy. They're going to look at two wars in the world. They're going to look at inflation still. They're going to look at the southern border.
I think they're going to be looking at the southwest border first and foremost.
Yeah, I agree. The border. And that's something all the Democrats are going to talk about is abortion rights. End of story. That's it. That's their number one. That's their opening kickoff. That's it. So
it's a big one.
Yeah,
it's a big one for them.
It is.
Politically, it's a big one. No, you're right. And you know what, Jack? What we haven't even mentioned, quite frankly, which is kind of surprising, in some ways, there's an ongoing trial now with a felony with the former president of the United States, and maybe contempt charges for violating a gag order. I mean, this is a strange political cycle.
It's bizarre.
And it's bizarre, and it's going to keep getting more bizarre as we get closer to the election.
Yep. I don't think politically the trials mean as much as CNN thinks, but we'll find out. Brad Card, Bruins, Maple Leafs game 3 tonight. What do you have?
Boy, the Bruins just did not look
good. What do you have tonight?
They look terrible. I think the Bruins are going to go up to Toronto and win, and I think that they're going to win game 3. And I think they end up winning the series, but I think it's a lot more difficult than it should be. And I'm just not crazy of the coaching right now, the Bruins. I think they've made some real rookie mistakes, and I hope that they can tighten it up. When you have two calls with too many men on the ice, that's just brutal. And one of them costs your goal. It's brutal, and that's coaching.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You're a former coach. You get some cred in that game. All right. Thank you, Brad.
All right. We'll see you.
John Decker, our own White House correspondent. We just heard Brad Carr talking about this foreign aid package as the Senate moves it through for aid, for example, to Ukraine. John Decker watching this. Because there's a lot at stake here, and should the American taxpayer be funding all this stuff in Ukraine with the war at Russia? Because these foreign aid bills are not inexpensive. John, take it away.
Well, they're not inexpensive. As you know, the equipment, the ammunition that Ukraine has been using over the course of the past 2+ years has been depleted substantially. That's the reason for this military assistance package. It also includes about a third of it, more than $25 billion of that aid package for Ukraine actually replenishes U.S. stocks of equipment and ammunition. But this is something that passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, 79-18, Jack. And we saw also bipartisanship in the House of Representatives. President Biden will likely sign that legislation today, and then that aid can get flowing to Ukraine as soon as possible.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, John. U.S. News and World Report has an interesting story, and a lot of times people talk about the United States and we're the problem, and you look at we are by far the number one country that's basically giving money to Ukraine to stave off the war against Russia and the invasion. And then you look at other countries, yeah, Great Britain's there and some other countries, but nothing like the level of the U.S.
Well, you also have to factor in, I wouldn't just call it individual countries. The European Union as a whole has also really stepped up. NATO has stepped up. I don't think that you can dismiss all of the contributions that they have made as well.
No, absolutely.
And the idea here is to ultimately force Russia to its knees, force them to come to the negotiating table. I think this will certainly give a shot in the arm to Ukraine's military effort against Vladimir Putin and Russia. I think that the war will look a lot different a few months from now than where it does right now in favor of Ukraine. And what we saw is even 9 Senate Republicans switching their votes. The last time this legislation came up in the Senate, they voted against it. Yesterday, last night, they voted for this legislation. So I think the tide is turning in terms of the way at least the Senate Republicans view the importance of this legislation.
John Decker, our own White House correspondent. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Jack.
Matthew Bartlett, I'm going to stop there. Welcome you in. There's a lot of stuff to talk about in Washington, including that aid package.
Wow, yeah.
But take it away.
What an intro, Jack. I'm so happy I can call in not just on the Middle East, but the mess in Colombia. Typically wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Listen, I am very happy. I am I'm a conservative. I am a Republican, but it didn't start off that way. Started off as a very liberal activist Democrat coming out of college. And for me, that meant looking at what was going on in Africa, HIV, AIDS, and poverty, a continent on fire, treatable, preventable disease. And I guess I'm lucky or proud, or I guess I always look back. Because what I learned early on, after 9/11, the early 2000s, coming out of college, was that America was not the enemy. America was the good guys. You know, when you saw that flag, you knew that there was going to be safety, security. Listen, we have freed and fed more people throughout history than any other country in the world. And we are the greatest country in the world. Why? Because we are a country that is based upon an idea. An idea of equality, an idea of I don't care where you came from, you know, some being driven out, thrown out of other countries. The best, the richest, they stayed in old Europe or Africa or China or wherever. But it was the meek, the poor, the humble that came to this country. And look what we've created. We are such an amazing country. Our best days are ahead. It's always going to be rough. There's always going to be instances of disturbance, of upheaval around the world, even here domestically. But let's remember, you know, we're all Americans and our best days are ahead. So
could you transcribe that audio and that speech? And seriously, I'd love to hear the president or some of our leaders give the same speech you just articulated verbally.
Yeah, and you know what the funny thing is, Jack? You know, I graduated. I went to high school in Nashville. I went to college in Connecticut and graduated and said, I want to fight HIV, AIDS, and poverty in Africa. And my parents, you know, Greek immigrants, said, you're going to go get a job that pays in money. So I sold windows and siding in the North Shore of Massachusetts. But I was always an activist, meeting with then Senator Judd Gregg and Congressman Charlie Bass. And again, I was a Democrat and President Bush's Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill, came to Nashua, New Hampshire, and this was my big protest moment. This was my big activist moment. I put on, you know, an old suit and went down to the Chamber of Commerce meeting, and after the end, I went up to him and said, hey, Mr. Secretary, we need a Marshall Plan for Africa, expecting him to say, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, you're crazy, you're nuts. And he looked at me and he said, I agree. And I was taken aback, Jack. I was supposed to fight the power. I was supposed to tell him, you know, he's going to tell me how wrong I am. I'm supposed to tell him how wrong he is. And he said, I think you're going to be very impressed with what President Bush has in plan for Africa. And it was, you know, months later where President Bush announced the biggest HIV-AIDS plan, a program that I, you know, flash forward, worked 20 years later at the State Department. So, you know, if we come in good faith.
Number one, I appreciate the personal story. You know, there was a great reporter at WCVB Channel 5 when I was a young cub there. His name was Jack Harper. He was a great reporter and really good. And he used to say, the best way to tell a story is tell one person's story. And what you just did is you told your story about growing up maturing, activism, focus, open mind. What do you make, Matthew Bartlett, of the blatant anti-Semitism at Columbia, at Yale, at MIT, if you will, at Princeton, at Cornell? What do you make of this?
Yeah, and I guess that's, what makes you think of it? I used to drive down, leaving my house at 4 a.m. to go down to Columbia for lectures on poverty in Africa. And now what we're seeing, is maybe, if I'm trying to be kind, a misguided notion, for a war where there are innocents being killed on both sides, that you have a vocal argument that has gone well beyond, that is advocating for, terrorism, that is advocating for anti-Semitism. It is gross. It is disgusting. It needs to be refuted. I am incredibly proud that, a group of Democratic congressmen, Dan Goldman, yeah, Moskowitz, went down, and now we have the speaker going down today to refute that, too.
But I want to stay with you on those one, in a very calm way, because I respect the heck out of you. I want to talk to you about this, because I, through college and my upbringing, history was always made to be very important to me, and I think it's not important to enough people in this country, young people included. So my question to you is, I was more acutely aware of the plight of the Jewish people during World War II than most, mostly because of friends of mine where I grew up in Swampscott. I talk about Kenny Perlow a lot on the show and being in his house when his father, Sid, was alive. And before every meal, very proud Jewish family, best buddy of mine, Sid would always tell the kids at the table visiting, because they had a nice pool and they always had good food, the history of World War II. And he said this, I tell you not to burden you, I tell you this because it can happen again. And he used to say that when I grew up. 6.2 million Jewish people. Hitler, the extermination of the Jewish race is part of his guise to be a maniac. Go to the Holocaust Museum. And so I've always been maybe more aware, is the way to put it, or respectful. People don't know how in 1948... they don't like the fact that, and who created Israel after World War II in terms of official, or how long Israelis have been on that land. But anyway, the point is, it's thousands and thousands of years of basically a holy war that will last long after we're alive in the Middle East. Let's just admit that. But how can you indirectly protest and chant death to Israel, death to the Jewish people today after World War II, and indirectly glorify and legitimize Hamas, a terrorist organization? That's the part I don't understand, and I mean that sincerely. It's one thing to call for the end of killing in Gaza. What's ceasefire, truce. That's what you're protesting. But when you start glorifying Hamas, death to Israel, tear down American society, now you are on the borderline of, beyond the borderline of hate speech, in my humble opinion. I want you to comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, I almost don't want to, Jack, and I've been listening to you all morning, and you do such a fine job, but it is maddening. It is incredibly upsetting. It is, almost depressing to see the fabric of our society being torn apart, to see moral clarity, yeah, being lost among, maybe the next generation on these college campuses, like you've talked about. Maybe this has been fermenting for years, but let's also be clear. October 7th was a barbaric and horrific attack. Anti-Semitism did not start when Israel responded. The anti-Semitism response, started that day when there were, unfortunately, people in disgusting ways that were celebrating, yeah, this horrific attack. Yeah. There's a long, long, unfortunate history of anti-Semitism. It knows no party. It knows no border. Yeah. It is shameful. It is sinful. It is important to refute it. We've seen political party, again, at Columbia today, I think Bob Kraft, God bless him, put out an amazing statement yesterday saying, listen, we're no longer donating, to institutions that we feel, are far beyond free speech and are really targeting.
And I didn't know he had attended. He had attended Columbia. I didn't know that. Yeah,
I didn't know that either. It's a crazy world.
Let me switch gears.
Try not to get lost in it. Yeah.
Let me switch gears. Do you find total switch? Presidential politics. My theme overnight, because I just happened to watch some great, by the way, documentaries on Netflix on World War II and the history, but also Bobby Kennedy when he ran for president. Great Netflix, Bobby Kennedy. It's like two or three episodes, real video of him when he was deciding to run for president. By the way, the country torn apart, violent protest on college campuses when Bobby Kennedy was running before he was assassinated by, let's just leave it at that, Saran. But let's just talk about Bobby Kennedy. So I'm watching this, and I'm watching today, Matthew Bartlett. You're so tuned into presidential politics. The total ignoring of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as a presidential candidate by the national media. Nothing to see here. He doesn't exist. And yet, if he gets on enough ballots, and Martha Zoller was on my show yesterday, she thinks he's going to get at least 20% of the vote, better than Perot did when Perot ran and helped Bill Clinton become a two-term president. What do you make of the national media's ignoring Robert F. Kennedy Jr. completely, like not even doing an interview, don't sit down with him, don't do a 60 minutes interview where why do your own family members turn on you, what's this stuff with vaccine, who are you, why are you running for president, you're Robert F. Kennedy, total ignoring Kennedy.
Not sure you're going to like this. He is an oddball, right? If his last name was Robert Smith and had some parents that were plucked out of Nebraska, No one would be talking about him.
No, that's why. No, so, I agree with your point. He's Robert F. Kennedy Jr., though.
Yeah.
He's better known, even if you think some of the stuff he believes is crazy, than Perot was.
Listen, very good point. I'm from New Hampshire. You know, we always look at Massachusetts and say, the Kennedys, you worship these people, good luck to you, okay? I'm live for your die. I don't like people that are, are privileged and famous because they got the right parents. So if you got a compelling case, take your goods and services and ideas and bring it to America. He was started, like it or not, by Steve Bannon, Tucker Carlson. The right propped him up, primarily about COVID response. So you have, maybe a low-informed voter that might want a different approach to a Biden or Trump, and that could be a threat maybe on the Democratic side. But some of the ideas that he's talking about, whether it's COVID or autism or vaccines or blockchain.
Or how about putting the federal budget transparency on federal spending of taxpayer dollars online digitally 24/7. Hey, listen, we got to run real quick. Matthew Bartlett, Darby Field Advisors, always fun. Thanks, Matt.
Live for your die. Thanks, Jack. Bye.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, Aaron, we all have seen his radio national correspondent. What states, because, we have online stuff, you have sports betting now in a lot of states like New Hampshire, you have casinos in some places, you have charitable gaming, which is glorified casino gaming. One of the most addicted states, Aaron, we all have seen his radio national correspondent. Good morning, Aaron.
When we talk about gambling, this should be no surprise to anyone, Jack. I feel like no
Vegas?
Need to bury the lead here. Nevada is the most addicted gamblers in the state. That's what we know from a recent Wallet Hub survey. It's followed by South Dakota, Montana, Louisiana, and Pennsylvania. Now, if you're looking for New Hampshire, pretty good. Number 36 on the list, not as much addiction to gambling there. But with casinos per capita, also the fewest, gaming machines per capita, the fewest, really what this shows us is that opportunity begets problems. The more opportunity people have to gamble, the more likely they are to find themselves in trouble. And with 1-3% of all U.S. adults addicted to gambling, it's something to look at. And I'm sure you remember, as I do, in the not too recent past, we looked at gambling like, ooh, bad, illegal, vice, don't do it. And then all of a sudden, the states were just like, nah, it's cool, go ahead. And they started doing it because it's such a massive revenue generator for the states.
Yeah, I know. I'm not, J-Dog, you're not, he's a sports, like an encyclopedia, but you're not a big online gambler, are you, J-Dog?
Nope.
You don't like gamble on your...
I don't gamble anything, nope.
Yeah, really. Are you, Aaron, or anyone in your family, I know younger people sometimes with their fantasy football, they'll be looking at their phone, not the game. Are you, do you sports gambling?
No, and I have to be honest, I'm like the biggest bummer to gamble with. I actually get somewhat anxious. Like, if we win, I'm like, oh, Gregory, let's go. Let's get out of here. I'm not fun. Like, I'm just a bummer, which is weird because I actually could play games, all day. I have so much, and I'm kind of competitive, and I can do that all day. But there's something about the chance as opposed to, skill that makes me uncomfortable. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next. But therein lies, I'm like, I get why this is a dopamine hit for so many people, because that whatever that is producing anxiety produces exhilaration in another person.
Well, it's funny because I think there's not a lot of gray area. I think people either gamble or they don't. There's not a lot of, It's like you either do it or
right.
You don't. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Aaron. Thank you. Aaron Real, NBC News. Thank you, Aaron. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. The very latest. Rory is glued to the Trump trial. Good morning, Rory.
Yeah, Jack, not much to talk about today. No testimony in the trial today. We're still waiting for that judge to issue a ruling when it comes to those allegations that the former president violated the gag order maybe 10 times, maybe actually one more last night. But, you know, he could be facing, what, $1,000 fine for each violation, possibly jail time, but that really seems unlikely.
Yeah, and this will, what, go 3 or 4? Well, how many weeks do you think?
They said 6 to 8, so they say that the former president should block out everything until Memorial Day weekend.
Wow. And, of course, CNN would like this to go 6 to 8 months for ratings. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.